Nice to see you all. Yes, it's good to be here today and to share some thoughts on this theme of people matter. And like David said, we've been given the task of building on the previous messages on this theme with the view to broadening the scope of God's heart for people out to all the nations of the world. So most of you here this morning know Ali and I and the journey that we've been on over the last number of years. Just maybe for anyone that doesn't know us, I'll give a little, just a brief background about our lives. Ali and I were married in 2004, and before we were married, we were both excited by the concept of being missionaries and were amazed and inspired by many biographies from some of the pioneer missionaries from centuries ago. We also caught a glimpse through the scriptures of God's great plan for humanity, and we wanted for our lives to be a part of that. The Lord put the nation of Turkey on my heart when I was about 20 years old. And from that time onwards, I knew that I'd end up serving God there one day. Well, fast forward to 2013, and we had completed various training courses, had three girls, and were ready to head over to Turkey to begin our missions adventure sent out from this church. We were there until mid-2015, when we rushed back to be by the side of Ali's sister Kath, as she was in the final stages of her battle with breast cancer. Since that time, we've been living here, and while supporting family, had been intending to head back to Istanbul to resume our previous life. But as many of you here would be aware, because we did send out an email just a couple of weeks ago, we've been considering a number of family and security factors that made us uncertain about whether we should indeed go back to Turkey. With much thought, prayer, discussion and counsel, we have arrived at the decision that we will not be heading back to Turkey at this time, as previously planned. This has not been an easy decision. Heart-wrenching, in fact, with so many people and factors to consider. We really needed God's guidance and help to make the best decision for our family. So we have His peace now that we are to stay here and provide some stability for our immediate and extended family. We have sensed God's peace about this decision, but we feel that we still have much to process, as this has been a massive change in our lives and one which I did not expect only a few months ago. So a couple of months ago, when David asked Ali about speaking today on missions, we were actually in the midst of all the turmoil concerning this decision. And we were very close to asking Pastor Dave if we could just give it a miss on this occasion, as we didn't feel like we were in a good place to be speaking out the front of church. However, as I was pondering this, I was just struck by the verse in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29, which says, "Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen." And it wasn't so much the unwholesome talk part of this verse that struck me, but the part that said, "Only say what is helpful for other people to build them up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen." I sensed that God was challenging us, that even though our path to a different nation has taken a detour at this time, that this doesn't change what God's heart and purpose has been throughout all time. Long before we were born, and well after we go to be with Him, this grand story, the outworking of God's purposes, relentlessly has and will continue. So what could we say today that would benefit you guys listening? I mean, many of you financially supported Ali and I whilst we were in Turkey, and you understand the need for God's people to work as a team to spread the gospel throughout the world. Perhaps you weren't supporting us. However, if you've been a Christian for any length of time, you would know about the Great Commission when Jesus told His followers to go and make disciples of all nations, teaching them to obey all things that He taught them. So I was pondering, what would be beneficial for you today? Well, what we'd like to do today is a couple of things. Firstly, I'm going to refresh your memory about how God's desire for all people to trust and worship him has always been his mission, even long before Jesus told his followers to go to all the world. We see his heart throughout the Old Testament too. And secondly, Ali is going to give some current statistics on where the church is up to in fulfilling Jesus' great commission in the world. So yeah, I was struck to go back to the Old Testament today and just have a look at some verses and scriptures there that shine a bit of a light on God's heart. Because Ali and I have given a lot of presentations over the last couple of years, and we've often been really talking about Jesus and the Great Commission and that side of things. But it's interesting to look back and see God's heart for people right from the start. So let's begin at the very beginning. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Then came people, then the fall, the flood, and then the Tower of Babel. And I just covered about 2,000 years of history in two sentences. See, this is one thing that we need to realize about the Bible, is that there are huge historical gaps. So much occurred that we don't have a record of. So it makes us realize that what is included in the Bible is what God has considered the important points. It's the executive summary, although some parts of Leviticus might not seem it when you're reading it. Or, as Paul said to Timothy, it's the Holy Scriptures which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith in Christ Jesus. So we've had the Tower of Babel. At this point, the focus turns to a man named Abram. We see God comes to him and makes some amazing promises to him. In Genesis 12, we read, "The Lord had said to Abram, 'Go from your country, your people and your father's household, to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you.'" Notice the last verse. "All peoples on earth will be blessed through you." God said to Abram at that time, that "I will make you into a great nation, and that through that nation, all peoples, all families on earth will be blessed." Now we know that ultimately, this blessing that came from Abraham was Jesus Christ. Paul speaks about Abraham in the book of Romans and Galatians, about how Jesus Christ was the fulfillment of this verse, that he is Abraham's seed. But before Jesus came to earth, we see a partial fulfillment of this word through the nation of Israel. The nation of Israel was to be a blessing to the world, a light to the world, that would show God's righteousness, holiness, and character. I remember reading the Old Testament years ago, when I was first really becoming more interested in God and the things of God. And it seemed to me like God's chosen people, Israel, were just his favorites, that he doesn't really care about the others very much. They're always just the enemy nation to be defeated by Israel. But now I've been able to see the Old Testament as a whole, I can see that God has always had his eye on all people. It's just that Israel played an important role in God's strategy for making himself known in those days. In Exodus 19, verse 5, about Israel, God said, "Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." So Israel was to be a kingdom of priests. That is, they were to have a mediatorial role between God and the nations. Although we don't see the Israelites being sent out like Jesus' disciples were with the gospel, we do see a lot of verses in the Old Testament that talk about the surrounding nations, and even nations from afar coming to Israel and learning about God. God's fame went out from Israel, and many people came to learn about the true God through God's acts. Time won't allow me today to give a comprehensive account of all the instances that we see this in the Old Testament. But let me just touch on a couple before I hand over to Ali. So what I'm going to do now is just have a look at a couple of instances that we see, just a bit of God's heart for other nations in the Old Testament. When King Solomon asked for wisdom and received great wisdom, it says here in Kings chapter 4, verse 34, men of all nations came to listen to Solomon's wisdom, sent by all the kings of the world who had heard of his wisdom. And you know that the story of the Queen of Sheba who came, she was one of those that came to hear about the great wisdom of Solomon. And Solomon's proverbs and his wisdom was all about God and what is wisdom in the long term. So I think a lot of the world at that time would have seen the splendor and the wealth and the greatness and the power that God had given him and the wisdom, and taken that back to their home countries and said, there's an amazing God and this is the true God. When Solomon was praying at the dedication of the temple, he said, as for the foreigner who does not belong to your people Israel, but has come from a distant land because of your name, for they will hear of your great name and your mighty hand and your outstretched arm. When they come and pray toward this temple, then hear from heaven your dwelling place. Do whatever the foreigner asks of you, so that all the peoples of earth may know your name and fear you, as do your own people Israel, and may know that this house I have built bears your name. I think that's an amazing verse that is kind of hidden in there in the Old Testament. So that all the peoples of the earth may know your name and fear you. It was more than just a big temple just for the Jews and everyone else go away because we're right and you're wrong. It was actually saying, let the foreigners come and see, and God, answer their prayers. Answer their prayers that they might know that you are the true God. Some other interesting things is that although we often think of the sacrificial system that we read in Leviticus and other parts of the Old Testament, we think of that as the way of worship that was ordained for the Jews, and that's true. It's interesting to note that foreigners could offer a burnt offering at the tabernacle when they were journeying through Israel. The Feast of Weeks and the Feast of Tabernacles were also mentioned as festivals that a sojourner could attend. That is, someone travelling through from another country. And it says that sojourners were to be treated well, since the Israelites had likewise been sojourners in Egypt. If we just move away from Solomon and the temple and the kingdom at that time and what great advertisement that was for God's glory and his fame, and we think about the story of Daniel. And I am assuming a lot of knowledge here. I'm sorry if you haven't read the story before. But the story of Daniel when he gets thrown into a lion's den and God miraculously saves him out of that. At the end, the king, Darius, says, I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. So here's another story of God doing amazing acts through his people Israel. And then the king standing up and saying, this is the true God, wanting his nation to know that he is the true God. In a similar way, the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, where in the end, King Nebuchadnezzar says, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces, for no other God can save in this way. We start to see a common theme through a lot of these Old Testament stories. We see God's amazing deliverance through to people who trusted him so that his glory and fame would be spread throughout nations that weren't Israel, other nations. And we keep on seeing it again. Then I'm not going to go into it, but the story of Jonah, how God showed his love for the city of Nineveh, not an Israelite city, So we see time and time again, even though there's so much in the Old Testament about Israel and God's specific instructions and the law and lots of things like that, we see time and time again that he was actually caring for and loving all of the nations around the place. Now, unfortunately, history shows us that many nations had turned away from God and become quite sinful and corrupt. But God was always faithful to bring some revelation of who he was. And that's as far as I'm going to go today. I just wanted to just bring to your remembrance a few of those things and hopefully just encourage you as we look back through the whole Bible, because it's pretty clear in the New Testament when Jesus comes and shows us the fuller revelation of who God is and then sends his disciples out. It's pretty clear that God's heart is for all people to know him and to believe in him. But as we look through the Old Testament, we just need to keep in mind that there are actually other nations and God is actually intimately interested in them as well. So now I'm going to hand over to Ali to bring us some statistics and some other bits and pieces. So thank you.
Good morning, everybody. It's so nice to be here. And all good. And obviously to be sharing about a topic that we are just so passionate about, mission and God's heart for the world, and just something that has just been so dear and so precious to us in the last few years. So I am going to stick to my notes because I am a blabberer, and so just excuse me with my reading and my looking, but I just didn't want to get too off track. So I'm just going to jump straight into it. As Andrew has been talking about, God is clearly a missionary God. His heart, his heartbeat, the essence of everything that he is about mission. And we see really throughout the Bible, as it's been highlighted today, that from cover to cover, he is showing us his mission. Mission is not something that the Bible just speaks about. Mission is actually the entirety of what the Bible is about. It is the context that provides the backbone for God's story and for our story. And God has been interested in redeeming all peoples to himself for all time. This mission is the context of the story of the Bible and the overarching narrative that drives everything that God does. And it's really only when we know the context of his story that I guess we can work out our own purpose in life. God wants to include us in the finishing of this story, and his desire is for us to be part of his great mission. And we've actually been created to be part of this, which is really exciting. Martin Luther King Jr. was once famous for saying that nothing in the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance, and that proves really true in our global strategies for advancing God's kingdom. If the command given by Jesus is to make disciples of all nations, then we can make our goal to find those people that haven't been discipled and taught to be followers of Christ. If mission and God's heart for the nations is such a big deal to God, then it really needs to be a big deal for us too. So in light of this, it's important that we take time to just have a little look at what the world is looking like today in terms of statistics about reached people and unreached people groups. And I hope that it provides a little bit of insight. Obviously, this is a topic that it's a bit hard to get right down to the figure exactly, super accurately as to, in terms of up-to-date statistics. But we think we've gotten pretty close to this one. These slides have been derived from the Joshua Project. I'm not sure how many of you have heard of that, but it's just a fantastic resource that gives an update on world mission statistics and where the world's at today. So I better use this little thingy here. And we'll just see if we can flick to our first one. So I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with the 1040 window. It's a fairly common term nowadays in terms of when we talk about missions. But basically it measures the longitude and latitude of certain areas in the world that hold the most unreached people groups. And so in a minute it's going to highlight, particularly over the areas of China and India, that's an area where the most populated unreached people groups lie. So you'll see some big red dots come up in a minute and that will paint a bit of a clearer picture. But at the moment, in the 1040 window, in this area, there is a total population of about 4.5 billion people that reside in these areas. And the total people groups that are living in these areas are about 8,717. So that's people groups, that's just not individuals, they're actually groups of people. So there we go. This slide sort of highlights a little bit more with those big red dots. It sort of paints a fairly clear picture of the locality of where these people are living. So as you can see, it's primarily sort of in India, Pakistan, China regions, and of course other places just surrounding them. But they do seem to be located primarily in this region. And so the total unreached people groups that are known to be in existence currently are about 5,874. So it's it's quite a significant amount, isn't it? And I know that when I looked at this again just recently, I was quite struck by that. So at the moment, the total percentage of the world's reached population makes up about 40.1% of the world population. Now, I guess it depends, you know, in terms of looking at this, you might be a cup half full or a cup half empty person, but I know I looked at that and thought, you know, that is actually pretty good. We have made a fairly significant impact as a church already. We're not halfway there, but we're nearly halfway there. But we still have halfway to go in terms of reaching the unreached people. Now, I just wanted to point out, and I probably meant to before, that the people in the 1040 window, I'll just see if I can scoot back here. The people in this region, and particularly the regions that are highlighted there in red, aren't more lost than a friend you might have here or another Aussie you know or a family member. But the people in this window have a lack of access to the gospel. That's really what the big issue is. So someone down here in Australia, someone in Australia that you might meet up in Blackwood up here in a cafe, even if they've never heard about Jesus or haven't got an understanding about him, it wouldn't take long for them to find out about Jesus. They might just walk down the road and bump into someone who's just left church this morning, or they could find out on the internet, or they could find out via the TV or another friend or someone from work. But the issue with unreached peoples in this region particularly is that they just have a lack of access to the gospel, full stop. And even if they were interested, they wouldn't actually have a chance to find out. So that's the significance particularly of the 1040 window. I have got this beautiful picture here of my beloved friend Meshe, and I think you've seen her. I've had her up on slides here before, I think, when we've shared. But basically, I just wanted to share a little story about how she came to know Jesus. Now, I'll flick straight from the 1040 window to her, but I really wanted to highlight how God pursues relentlessly individuals as much as he pursues nations as a whole. And obviously, it takes many individuals coming to him to bring a nation to him. And Andrew and I have had a beautiful insight, I think, with our experience working in Turkey in the last few years of how God really works and chases after individuals to bring them to him. And so Neshe was probably my dearest and closest friend. She was a language helper at the beginning and then really just became my closest friend. And we would meet every week for a coffee and she'd cook all this lovely food for me and we'd have lovely heart-to-hearts in Turkish, as far as that could go. And but she just had this beautiful experience of meeting Jesus. So it's not uncommon in the Muslim world for Muslims to experience this dream of Jesus, which is really often quite similar, of Jesus coming to them in often clothed in white and calling their names. And my friend Neshe had experienced that one night and she woke up in the morning and she was just changed forever. She had seen Jesus in this dream and he had called her name. And she woke after that and she was changed. So she came from a very devout and very conservative Muslim family. She had never heard the name of Jesus. She had never heard about what it meant to be a Christian. All she knew was Allah and the Quran and his teachings. And it was just a life-changing moment for her to have received this dream. And, you know, there were countless people that actually Andrew and I talked to that had experienced the same dream, and we were able to just gain insight through our time in Turkey and just really see God's pursuit of an individual. And, you know, it doesn't really matter what we do. We're just there as his hands and feet to be walking alongside them, but it was his mission to be drawing them. So I just hope that kind of personalised it a little bit more. We were certainly very touched to see firsthand God's chasing after individual hearts to bring a nation eventually to him. And we do believe that, God has much more in store for the people of Turkey. So we're going to just flip now to some worldwide Christian statistics, just to paint a little bit more of a picture about where we're at today in terms of where we sit today as Christians in the world. So the first one there highlights that At the moment, Christians number approximately about 2.2 billion in the world. Now, that includes all denominations. And there are about 900 churches for every one unreached people group. And there are 78,000 evangelical Christians for every one unreached people group. So I don't know how you found that, just reading that through quickly then. They're really big, heavy statistics to take in. But I know for me, I was just really captivated by those last two. And, just overwhelmed at the fact that the numbers are so unbalanced, aren't they? There are just so many more churches than there are unreached people groups, and so many more Christians than there are non-Christians. And so, yeah, it is clear when we look at this that the number of Christians in the world far outweighs the number of unreached people groups, and so we really do have a critical role to play. As a church, I really believe we are wonderfully missions-minded, and Andrew and I often in our mission circles are so proud to brag about all the things our church is involved with, because it's not necessarily a common thing today to be as missions-minded as we are here at The Hill. So we are so proud of that. We have been involved with so many projects, with Pastor Peter and Myanmar and the many works there, but also the broad ministry of Kevin and Brenda Hughes and all that they were involved with. And, of course, your beautiful partnership with us in Istanbul. So, I believe we've made a really significant impact already in many ways. And through the faithfulness of this church, we know that many, many have been touched and many seeds have been planted and reached for Jesus. But we need to continue to remember that we all play a role and to be on our knees and seeking for how we personally can be involved in bringing the good news to nations that haven't heard. Now, we can't all go, but we can pray and send and financially partner with missions around the world, as we have already been doing. We have a real incredible privilege to be alive in the middle of God's story of reaching the world. And it hasn't quite finished yet, but we know it will, and we know he's going to bring it to completion. But what a beautiful privilege we have to be a part of that. And Andrew and I can personally advocate for how incredible it is to be part of reaching the nations in an overseas context. It was such a privilege to be partnered with all of you in this way and to see firsthand God's passionate pursuit of people to bring people on the other side of the world with absolutely no understanding of Jesus to him. So we're going to finish off now by just playing a very beautiful song called Sing Along. It's by the Passion Band. I'm not sure how many of you would have heard it before, but it just talks about the need to sing along to what God's heart is for our world. What is it that he is doing? When I listened to it, it was a little bit like a lullaby, just God's beautiful heart in wanting to sing over the world his love song. But in that, what is our part? And we need to just be just seeking God for how is it as a church and how is it as an individual personally that we, you know, how is it that we can be playing our part in terms of reaching the nations for him? So we'll play that now and finish off.